Hey everyone, we're back for our third and final podcast on how to lie with statistics. We're going to be discussing chapters 8, 9, and 10.
All right, to start us off, I would really love to talk about the intro to chapter 8. And the author brings up smoking and grades, and it seems like smoking causes bad grades. That is the conclusion that whatever the study came away with. And he starts to go in and say, well, maybe not. Maybe it's the bad grades that cause smoking. Maybe people with bad grades are more sociable, and then they smoke socially. Or maybe there's some other cause altogether. So I think that's really cool, and definitely something to look more at. And gives a bunch of other examples. So what do you guys think about correlation versus causation?
I think that there's a fine line between the two, and a lot of people don't recognize that just because things like increase or decrease at the same rate as another thing increases or decreases means that there's like a direct causation. It's just an observation that you can make and you think maybe they're related, but they're probably not in all cases.
I definitely agree with the fact that there's always like more than one lurking element where you can't just look at like one thing as being the main cause of the effect at the end, that there's more side effects.
I'd like to say that I think it's pretty interesting that we can look at an analyzation in more than one way, so we can say that one thing causes the other or the other causes the certain thing. But I think because of the way we think, is there's no actual answer as to what causes what, because we think differently from everybody else, so we want to observe what we want to think.
I would just like to really briefly bring up chi-square, it's not T, it's math, and how much can that actually be used here? Since it's the goal of chi-square is to actually examine whether or not there is an underlying variable that's influencing it. But with a lot of these situations, it can be very complicated, or really, I just want to know the math aspect of this. How much can it be applied, especially what we're learning in class? Anyone have ideas? This is really for Mr. Miles. Mr. Miles, do bring this up in class. That'll be great.
I don't know. Chi-square is obviously important, but because we all think differently and we hear different, we hear the same thing, but we think it in different ways. It's that we really don't know what variable is causing the other. It's just the way it's shown.
Yeah, and I think chi-squared, is more for, comparisons between things that are more than just two variables, mm-hmm. Explanation of two variables, which is like correlation for two variables instead of just one. So I think that's how we can really chi-square back to correlation.
What about the degrees of freedom? I feel like with that, we're leading up to chi-square statistics, in reference to the different degrees of freedom, all the way up to, I think he gave us, 8 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, this is a bit of a tangent. Let's move on. Okay. also I think it's interesting is that certain variables are both the cause and effect of each other. Mm-hmm. The example the book gave was amount of stock and income. The more income you have, the more stock you can buy, and the more stock you have, the more income you have, because it's making mm-hmm. you money. So I thought that was very interesting.
I'd like to point out on page 91, it says another thing to watch out for is the conclusion in which correlation has been inferred to continue beyond the data, blah, yada, yada.
Has been demonstrated.
Yeah. So I think that's very important, and he brought it out for a specific reason. Anybody have any ways to think that's important?
I think I can actually relate this back to the quotes in the inside cover. Oh, not the quote, but the passage we were told to read for last podcast, where it's with the river and the pump,
mm-hmm.
and how the river can't rise above its source.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a continuation of that,
right?
Where you should not draw these huge conclusions from data that may be faulty.
Mm-hmm. And also, just to relate that further, there's a part on page 94 that talks about how some article drew data from Cornell but made their own conclusion, but made it sound like Cornell made the same conclusion using that data, which also could be false.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's so shady, because when people see Cornell, they're like, oh, that sounds professional.
Yeah.
Like, big science institution, yada, yada, yada. But then the conclusion is all the journalists, and it's a false one. There's a lot of issues with that.
This brings back to, like, economics class, when we're talking about the economic bubble, like, because there's a brand name or a good name, like,
mm-hmm.
things have to be shown different ways and ways of better, like.
Yeah, that appeals to
that
people.
So that's more appealing instead of just giving them the actual truth sometimes. And that goes with, like, a lot of the graphs that we see, because they try to make it presentable so that we're only seeing the good parts, and it doesn't matter what the range is, as long as it's, like, from a small difference to a big difference, that's a difference for the company, and in a way, that's a good thing for them.
Mm-hmm. Right, there's an example I really, really like on page 97 that kind of relates to this, and how key information can be ignored, and it's about how turned out a woman's foot is
mm-hmm.
the older she gets and the more she walks. So, obviously, the data makes it seem like the older you get, the more turned out your feet become. But what they're ignoring was that, back in the day, it was fashionable and, like, very womanly to walk a certain way, and that's with your feet turned out.
Mm-hmm.
So, with the younger generation, they're not going to do that. And the data doesn't say that at all, and they made all these conclusions, like, the older you get, you walk a certain way for whatever reason. And that can be, that's, like, a super different conclusion than, oh, well, they just walk differently back in the day. That's the fashionable thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think these examples are ridiculous. Like,
I
feel like they just pull out, like, any example. Because, like, I'd never thought, like, the older you, like, I mean, obviously sometimes it gets different. But, like, how turned out your foot is, like, from when you're younger to you're older, like, where did they come up with that? Like,
yeah, who knows? Like, why do these studies exist? Why
right.
do they matter? Who cares?
Sometimes I feel like some of these studies exist just so you can prove the statistics wrong or something like that.
Oh, that's the fun part.
Can we go to chapter 9?
Yes.
Okay, so on chapter 9, there's, like, the first sentence. I actually really liked it. I thought it summed up a lot of the things that this whole book is talking about, which is that misinforming people by the use of statistical material might be called statistical manipulation, in a word, through not a very good one, statisticalization?
Statisticalization?
Right? Yeah.
That sounds terrible, sounds like it's a disease.
I thought it just connects with the whole book in general, that it sums up everything that we've been talking about and that everything that the author is talking about.
Yeah, because the whole thing's about manipulating the data
mm-hmm.
and how, either how to spot it or how to even really do it. Because the stuff with the graphs, that's really cool. If I was going to become, like, a journalist or something, or,
mm-hmm.
like, an ad man, using all those techniques. Sell the products.
I mean, in a way, by reading this book, we kind of know that now, which is kind of the main goal of this book, to teach us how to lie with statistics, obviously. That's in its name.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So there's some stuff with the census and incomes. And they're saying that the census said the income of an average family is, like, around 3,000. But some, like, philanthropic foundation was like, it's 5,000. Yay. And then the way they did this was that they took total income and then divided it by the total amount of people. And however big the household size was, then they gave that amount to each person. So if you had two adults and two kids, you get four, like, people's worth of money.
Okay.
But really, that's not true. Kids don't make money. They're just there. They suck up money.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting, and I'm wondering, like, why that information wouldn't have been included, because I think this is real. This actually happened.
Yeah.
And why they would do that, because, yeah, it was good for the philanthropic thing, but really, how it's so blatant that, like, it doesn't make sense why they would, or who would okay that.
Who would okay anything? Like, this entire book is, like, it's crazy how much they lie, but they just do it to make themselves look good and to make, like, thing, like, to prove a point that might not even be, like, positively proven, like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because at the end of the day, you want to get something out of it, so that's what they want to do. They don't want to lose anything or
they want it to
they
be
want
impactful.
Have like the yeah least amount of loss. So
let's all look at the bottom of 103. The little sentence right there to show we aren't cheating.
Which is that?
103. With the grass, yeah.
When they did the incomes,
the
map of the U.S.,
yeah.
And they're like, look how much money the government's blah, 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 blah. And they did it based on states and the state income.
Yep.
So when they took all these western and middle states, which has a small population, a lot of farmers who don't necessarily make a ton,
right.
Where the cost of living is also lower, then it looks like a lot of area. It looks like a very significant figure. But when you take it from the East Coast, with high income, high cost of living areas like New York, then it's suddenly a much smaller area and a lot less impactful.
Mm. That's just wrong.
I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, it was really cool. We're not cheating. Look, we did it the other way.
Okay.
Oh, and then also with corrupt data and corrupted data, when you ask people to provide information about themselves, they will almost always lie.
Right.
Like
yeah.
If you're talking about how many times you bathe or how much sleep you get, or what magazines you read, people are going to be like, oh, how can I make this sound a little better? Even if it's anonymous, there's still that perception that, oh, I'm giving away information about myself.
Right.
So anything that can get a little bit iffy.
Yeah, there's all, like, it's almost, it's really impossible to avoid any kinds of errors on either, like, the researcher's part or the, like, the specimen to,
right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
quote-unquote specimens part. Or whoever's being observed, it's hard not to find some kind of error in it that could have skewed the data in some way or another.
I think also looking at, like, your range of data or, like, how many people you collect your data from is also important. Because on page 109, it was one of the quotes said, any percentage figure based on a small number of case is likely to be misleading. So you have to look at, like, the number of people that you observed.
I like the image on page 110 and 111. I think it really set a good graphic for showing how the percentages can change based on the base of where it started, because it says, oh yeah, there was a 50% pay cut, so now the pay is $50. And then when they say the pay cut was restored, well, yeah, so you're getting 50% of what you made before, but that's not the original amount, which was 100. You're only getting 75 now. And I thought that was an interesting way to illustrate how that data changes, even though the percent is the same.
Right. He gave a lot of examples of percentages and, like, prices and stuff, where it's, like, I can't remember the actual numbers, but it's, like, 60 and then 40 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't add these percentages together. You take 60% of the original and then 40% of that next number. It's not 60 and 40 together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really interesting. And then so a lot of this with, like, housing and prices, and I think he gives, like, car prices as an example with interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
With, like, monthly payments, you can't add those percentages together, and it ends up being more money than you expected it to be.
Guys, want to move on to chapter 10?
Yeah.
Again, he adds a lot of, like, I don't know, he's, like, so goofy to me, because, like, he's just, like, again, like, I should not be addressing you like you're a pirate. Like, I don't know.
I didn't get that. Pirate cutlasses? In what way?
But
you've been
yeah.
talking at us for 10 chapters.
Mm.
Okay, well, this whole chapter is
a lot of, like, important questions that we should be asking.
Right,
yeah.
It's a kind of a rundown of when you see a statistic
yeah.
in a newspaper, what should you ask yourself to make sure it's okay?
Yeah.
So that's, like, who says so, and, like, how do they know, and what's missing from this data?
Do you want to say
someone
change
the subject? And
I think the most important question that someone should ask when looking at the data is whether or not it's realistic.
Right, does it make sense?
Yeah. Which is a lot on page 137, which is, does it make sense? I think that question makes... Because once you ask that question, you can fill it up with background questions of where does this number come from, how does this get here, and like all that. But asking that question, does it make sense, is a very important thing.
Yeah,
me too. I agree.
I'd like to go to 127, like what's missing? Like when I'm always looking at something statistical or not, I want to know what's missing, like what did they hide behind truth and or hide behind the lies. And then, like, I don't know, I just always thought about that. It just might be me, but
mm-hmm.
I always wanted to know, like, is everything that they present to me true or not?
And sometimes they're not even hiding it on purpose. Sometimes they just don't even know that that it's missing, but it is.
Right.
And that's even more frustrating.
Asking whether or not there's bias also really goes along
mm-hmm.
with that. Like,
mm-hmm.
what is their agenda? Whose side are they on? What is their goal?
Right.
And, like, what are they trying to communicate with these statistics?
Mm-hmm.
Can there be data that isn't biased? Or what are some examples of that?
I think for it to be completely unbiased,
yeah.
you have to ask every single person. And it also has to be something where the people are not the ones giving the information.
Mm-hmm.
So every single person, and it's not something like, oh, how much do you sleep, unless you're actually monitoring
mm-hmm.
each
yeah.
night how much they sleep.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that would be good data.
Because
otherwise,
be like,
it's too subjective.
Yeah, it'd have to be some like kind of like computerized way of collecting the data. Because like if you just ask someone like face-to-face, they might like look at you, might not want to give you the right answer, or they feel a little bit self-conscious. Might, you know, you never
yeah.
know. So anything that's like more like that has to do with like computer collection of data, I think would be less biased, unless the computer's like broken too, which means we'll never get anything without a bias then.
Doesn't that sound like a lot of work?
Well, yeah.
That's why
it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
yeah.
That's like,
one of the reasons why.
I mean, like, the census tries, because they have to get everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
even then, there's issues. People try to get around it for, like, whatever reasons, or
yeah.
someone's sick and they don't fill it out.
Yeah. There's also, like, homeless people and stuff.
Right.
Right.
That can't even, like, get access to complete the census.
Mm-hmm.
Should we round it off?
Yep, to sum it up, this book, I was very surprised. I'm really happy this book presented this information the way it did. In the beginning, I did not like the writing, but it grew on me. I thought it was really fun towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it does present very good information. I feel like it's accurate and that they're not misleading us themselves, and that this math part of it's really solid.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this book is on Bill Gates' beach reading list, just so you all know. It's really great.
I don't know. Like, I kind of, like, I'm scared to, like, ever look at something that has
data
this. Yeah.
Right.
Because, like, I don't know, like, now that I read this, like, now I don't know, like, who's lying and what's the truth and who's behind this? And, like, I'm just going to keep on asking questions and there's never going to be, like, a real answer.
I feel like that happens with everything, though. Like, once you
yeah.
study it, like, I can't look at films anymore the same
oh,
way.
Oh, true.
Well,
yeah,
honestly,
I mean,
in about a week, I'll probably stop caring.
I mean, yeah, but you're still going to think about it in a way.
Yeah.
Like, once you know something, you know it, and
yeah.
it doesn't go away.
I definitely am going to think about things differently now. I also think the book as a whole was kind of, like,
yeah.
lots and lots and lots of examples of things, and it was a little, like, it got a little boring towards the end, because especially it was, like, summarizing what happened in the previous chapters and bringing it all together and stuff, and I think that was really neat. I just don't like the way it ended, because it seemed kind of, like,
off.
There was something missing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was just like, okay, I'm done asking these questions, and that's the book. It's all gone now. I'm just like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't think it would end that way. I feel like chapter 9 does a better job at pulling all the previous chapters together than chapter 10 does.
Yeah.
And I think they should have been switched, but that's just me.
I agree.
Is that all?
Yep.
All
right.
Thanks
for listening.
Thanks for listening.